This is Patty Daniels. I'm the executive producer of Vermont Edition, and you're listening to today's podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In these final days of the 2017 legislative session, Governor Phil Scott is asking lawmakers to make a dramatic change in the way that Vermont's teachers get their health care. Instead of having local school boards negotiate this benefit as part of their contracts with teachers, the governor wants these negotiations to take place at the state level. He thinks this plan will result in major savings, and he wants to use this money to lower the statewide property tax rate for education. House Speaker Mitzi Johnson wonders why the governor waited until the end of the session to unveil the specifics of his plan.
The governor's proposal should have been part of his budget to begin with. It should have been a proposal on the table in January for the people that wanted to raise this discussion so that we could really dig into the questions.
Why did the governor wait until the end of the session to propose his plan? And will legislative leaders and the governor come to an agreement on this issue? These are some of the questions we have today for Governor Phil Scott. Governor, welcome back to the program.
Oh, good afternoon, Bob.
Great to have you here.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
So let's start with this question. We got an email from Paula in Enosburg Falls about this very question. And she wrote us, to me, the big question over the governor's demand to change a statewide health care contract with 40,000 teachers and school workers is, why did he wait so late in the session to propose it? Why did he wait until April 25th to spring it on the legislature, even as many committees were shutting down, and insist under the threat of a budget veto that it was something they must do? So what's the answer to that question?
Well, I think we should go back just a little bit, take a walk down the path of history here. During the campaign, I talked an awful lot about what some of the problems we face, the $1.6 billion we spend on education. We're educating 20,000 less kids than we were 20 years ago. We're spending $19,000 per student. They're hearing cries for relief from those with property tax issues throughout the state. So I think we all recognize the fact that we need to do something to address education spending and property taxes as well. So going into the session, as you might recall in my budget address, and I'm going to read you this because I thought this might come up. But this is what I said. I'm proposing parity in what teachers and state employees contribute toward the cost of their health care. State employees currently pay 20% of their health care premiums, and most private sector workers pay even more. By comparison, teachers currently pay about 15%. Now, as you may remember, I put that plan forward, asked for parity, asked that we level fund budgets, and asked that we have a different date in terms of the elections. That wasn't well received by many in the legislature. In fact, the day after, they discounted it completely. They didn't want to talk about it. As well, I had many of the school boards and superintendents that weren't real happy with me either. So they came forward a bit later, the school boards and superintendents, and said they had a plan. Because of the Affordable Care Act, there's a time in history when we could save $75 million because of this so-called Cadillac tax that the Affordable Care Act is going to impose on teacher health care benefits. So they're transitioning to another plan, VHI, the Vermont Educational Health Initiative. They administer this plan. So they've got this all worked out. They've testified before the legislature over the last couple of years. This is all teed up to go. So they said, you should initiate this. We should take control of this. We should have parity throughout the state, incorporate some of what you're saying with what's going to happen. So I said, you know, I'm not sure that I'm the one that can deliver this message at this point in time. My political capital is pretty much used up. You ought to testify. You ought to bring this to leadership in the House and the Senate, which they did. So this was back in January and February. So for this, for some to say that this hasn't been brought up or talked about aren't really being correct and factual.
But at the same time, they were not talking about a statewide health care contract for teachers at that time, something to be negotiated at the state level and to take it away from the local level.
And I would say that I've been talking about this since the beginning, and I've been talking about parity since the beginning. I've been talking with legislative leadership about this for the last couple of months. So this is no surprise. I've been giving them the latitude to bring it forward themselves as a solution to the problem that we're facing. But when you have all different types of plans throughout the state negotiated separately, and some of the school boards are put at a disadvantage, I believe, because you're actually ratcheting one against the other. So taking the healthcare portion out of the negotiations, I thought, would have a smoother transition to this plan. We could have some consistency, and we can understand what we're dealing with. And so I propose to bring this forward in a statewide effort, have parity throughout through a contract negotiation for health care only between the union and the state. I've said since that it doesn't have to be the state. It could be another entity. And I said, I offered, maybe it's the school boards association. Maybe they deal directly with the teachers, if that's the problem with collective bargaining. So there are other approaches that I put forward with legislative leaders for them to contemplate. As well, the easiest way might be just to put it in legislation, develop the plan, say what it's going to be, consistent throughout. Let us rebase this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to save $75 million. Now, I just want to make sure everyone understands, it's $75 million worth of savings. We're saying take $50 million of that, put it back in the pockets of teachers so that they're left whole, that there's no difference in what they're receiving today than they would tomorrow under this provision. So everyone gets something. The state gets to recoup the $25 or $26 million. I said we should use some of it for property tax relief, make investments in early childhood care and learning, and for higher education. The House came back and said, "If we're going to do anything, we're going to take advantage of this situation to get property tax relief." And I said, "Fine, that's okay."
So I could be wrong. I know you talked about parity, and you mentioned it, as you said, in your budget address. But I think people would be surprised that of the whole concept of having statewide negotiations for a health care contract, that specifically did not emerge until maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I've been having those talks with legislative leaders over the last couple of months. So this is nothing. This is no surprise.
But it was never discussed in public?
Not from my – well, I'm not sure who might have done that, but it wasn't something that I was advocating for publicly. And as you might remember, during some of our press conferences, when they asked me where we were going to get the money for some of the initiatives that I thought we still needed, some of the investments and the economic investments that I thought were necessary, I kept saying – we should go back to the VHI situation. We should go back to the substantial money that we would save by implementing this.
I do remember you saying that about VHI. I don't remember a specific conversation about you saying, and the way we're going to achieve it is through a statewide teachers contract.
Again, I think that I've said we wanted parity throughout to take this complicated negotiation off the table so that these school board members who ran and won their seats, I'm sure didn't contemplate that they were going to be negotiating for healthcare benefits. What they wanted to do was add their voice to curriculum and negotiating with teachers and trying to do whatever they can on a local level. But I'm sure, I'm positive that they didn't run for election in order to negotiate healthcare benefits.
So the Senate Democrats have a plan, and they want to leave the negotiation at the local level, establish a savings base, and they say they can achieve the kind of savings that you're looking for, but negotiations are still left at the local level. Can you accept that kind of approach?
Well, unfortunately, their plan only deals with it in the first and maybe first half of the year and maybe going into the first part of the next year by imposing a $13 million reduction in the amount you can spend, what they're advocating for initially. And we've come, you know, there's been some back and forth in this, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds because it's changing every day. So we've they came back with that proposal. Advocated for reducing the amount of money that we would give the schools by $13 million and letting them decide where they're going to find the savings. They did mention in there about the 80-20 VHI plan, but it just said, and you can go to here to the 80-20 plan in order to obtain these savings. But there's a big difference between can and shall. And that's just that one word that separates us.
So can you see yourself agreeing to a solution that leaves the negotiation at the local level?
Well, again, I'm saying just maybe we should just put it into law for this year so that we can rebase. Just do it and let the teachers negotiate with the school boards for everything else but health care during this first year. And then next year, the year after, after we rebase and everyone gets settled into what this new healthcare is, and again, I can't reiterate enough that this leaves teachers whole. It doesn't. There's no more money out of their pockets. $50 million of the $75 million goes towards making sure that they're left with what they had before. So by rebasing this, then going back to the same type of bargaining next year, the year after, that's fine with me. My goal isn't to take away collective bargaining. My goal is to save money for taxpayers.
We got this email in. If teacher pay and other benefits are still negotiated at the local level, how can the governor promise any property tax relief given that teachers will demand higher pay to offset the greater out-of-pocket costs of their health insurance? Won't that added local expense negate any savings from a reduced statewide property tax rate?
Well, I've answered this before, and I just said it, but I'm happy to do it again. $75 million worth of savings with these new plans. We take $50 million of that, and then we give it back to teachers to make sure that their out-of-pocket costs, the cost of the type of health care is the out-of-pocket cost isn't any more than it is today. So you're taking $50 million of the savings to make sure that that doesn't happen. So,
but there are questions about that, too. Legislative Council had an analysis that came out this week, and it said, quote, funds in the health savings accounts may not be sufficient to cover a teacher's out-of-pocket costs.
Well, may is another word. VHI, and this is a nonpartisan administrator. They're the ones that have developed this. They've done all the modeling. They've done all the actuarials for the last couple of years. They're confident that these numbers will come forward. And I have a great deal of respect for the Joint Fiscal Office, but them looking at this over the last 2 or 3 weeks compared to VHI, this, again, nonpartisan administrator that has great faith in what's going to happen, has taken a look at this as well with Blue Cross Blue Shield. So I tend to trust what they're saying. And if you take the budgets that have been passed, like in March, in the school budgets that have been passed, they didn't take advantage of these savings, but they did. Their budgets did include pay increases for teachers, so that's going to continue to happen. That negotiation will still happen in terms of negotiations for pay.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Rob in Montpelier. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Bob, and thank you, Governor, for being on the show. As a spouse of a teacher who has actually put, I think, maybe 70, 80 hours on of her day toward of her week teaching the children and planning, I am deeply concerned that this is more of an attack on the teachers and the quality education that they're putting through. And this is not the time to go after the most hardest working profession in the state. And I'm deeply concerned that this is just a switch in a tactic from hardline Republicans. I would like to know why is all of a sudden this dramatic shift in attacking teachers.
Well, thank you, Rob, and I'm sure I'll see you in the State House this afternoon when we get back there. But Rob brings up a good point in terms of thanking the hardworking teachers. This is National Teachers Week, ironically enough. And I was going to be a teacher myself. Went through UVM, received my certification, did my student teaching, and decided not to teach. But I have a great deal of respect for teachers and all that they do for us. So this is not an attack on them. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. This isn't going to come again. If we don't take advantage of this now, this gets lost. This isn't going to happen. So all I'm advocating for from a fiscal standpoint, when we're spending $1.6 billion for education, $19,000 for a student, that we take advantage of the situation now and give some relief to property taxpayers who have been screaming for relief for years. This will leave the teachers whole. They will not suffer one iota from this provision.
Let's talk to Adrian, who is calling from Shrewsbury. Hi, Adrian. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I would like to voice my support, my strong support, for at a minimum this year bargaining at a statewide level for health care. We are in the midst of bargaining with both our teachers and our support staff currently. We are at impasse with teachers, although that conversation is ongoing and scheduled for mediation. A big portion of this is health care. We haven't even gotten onto salaries yet. Our support staff contract is also in bargaining, and that seems to be going a little bit better. But I would love to have this off my plate. It is not, I don't want to say it's so complicated that school boards can't handle it, but there's a lot of moving pieces. And keeping teachers whole was our primary desire. Our proposals, every single one of them did not take any money away from take-home pay for teachers, and their coverage is the same. Healthcare just looks different, and change is hard.
And Adrian, can I ask you a question?
Sure, absolutely.
Do you, people who support the governor's position, one of the arguments they make is that local school boards are really overmatched at the local level when it comes to negotiations with the teachers. Do you find that to be the case?
I don't want to say overmatched, but there's certainly a more organized effort by the Vermont NEA than school boards have. Yes, we may have access to lawyers, we have access to consultants, but there is no, you know, even though the Vermont School Boards Association sends out help, they do not send bargainers to us to help us bargain. The teachers have a UNISERV person. Our teachers have had a UNISERV person at every negotiation session, which has really impacted the scheduling because they're spread thin because everybody's bargaining. The support staff, our UNISERV person, has actually been their spokesperson. We are not connected with every other school board in that same way.
Adrian, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's talk to Colleen in Bristol. Hey, Colleen, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you, and hi, Governor Scott.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm a teacher, and I want you to know I think this sounds wonderful. I think, actually, if you had a statewide teacher health care, that would be something that would attract good teachers to the state, because to me, if you have a large, there's so many small towns in here, it's got to be really hard for them to afford good health care for the teachers, but when you have a big group of people to negotiate and get health care for, that just makes sense. I think your idea is wonderful, and I really, really hope that it passes. I don't understand why people are arguing about this at all. So, again, I just want to compliment you. I think you're doing a great job, and thank you for your work.
Colleen, thanks for your phone call. We have another opinion from Greg in Northfield. Hey, Greg, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Now, I've just got a quick question for the governor. He's mentioned a couple of times that there'd be no change, no iota was the term he used, in effect on the teachers. And I just wanted to ask him, like, he's saying that there'll be absolutely no increase in costs, no out-of-pocket change to teachers, and also no I wanted to ask if there would be a guarantee that there'd be no decrease in any sort of benefits for the teachers, and also what sort of guarantee he can provide in that area, and, you know, where he gets the, you know, where he can provide that guarantee, how he can do so.
Well, again, this is an initiative that VHI, the Vermont Education Health Initiative, has been working on for a couple of years, and to transition these plans, they've developed these plans that they say will, with the extra $50 million, will create that parity. There will be out-of-pocket costs. There are today with most teachers and most plans. A lot of this is on average, and there may be some ups and downs, incremental ups and downs, but because that's what's happened throughout Vermont. There are some who receive 100% of their health care benefit without any copay contribution or nothing at all. There are some in Vermont that have 25% contributions. I would like to see us create some parity, uniformity throughout Vermont, so that much like our state employees, I mean, I've talked to a number of state employees who have said, I don't understand what everyone's complaining about. We pay that now. State employees pay 20% of their health care benefit. That's their contribution. So we when I take a look at this, I look at the guidelines that I base every decision on in terms of this VHI discussion. I want to make sure that we maximize the savings, we keep teachers whole, we protect kids in the programs, we provide parity and uniformity throughout Vermont, and we simplify the negotiations, taking the guesswork out for these school boards. I think that if we can accomplish all of those, and I think we can, we'll bring some relief to Vermonters and again some consistency that we desperately need, and we'll help in future negotiations between school boards and teachers.
My guest today is Governor Phil Scott, talking about the big issue at the State House, and that's the governor's plan to have a statewide health care contract for teachers. We're going to talk about other issues as well, but Governor, we did get this email from David who says, if you're going to have a statewide health care contract for teachers to achieve parity, how about a statewide contract for salaries for teachers? Isn't that the logical next step?
I think there have been a few politicians over the years who have tried that. I think Ralph Wright did that. You might recall that. Ralph Wright brought that up, I believe. Sue Bartlett might have at one point, and I'm not sure about Howard Dean, but there have been numerous proposals to have a statewide contract. That isn't my goal. What I'm trying to do is take advantage of the savings we find right now at this point in time. And we can discuss in the future whether we should be having a statewide contract for health care benefits negotiated by different parties. That can be a separate discussion. But we need to focus on this issue right now, because if we wait, if we don't take advantage of this now, it's lost. It gets eaten up.
Let me just ask you a more philosophical question. Do you find it odd at all that a Republican governor is backing a plan that takes away local control from school boards? Now, in any other year, if school boards were negotiating a health care contract and they had some savings, they would have a debate among themselves of, should we lower taxes? Should we hire a fourth grade teacher? Do we need a new boiler? They'd have those kinds of debates on those kinds of issues. Where you're really closing the door on that and saying you must use it for health care. Aren't you chipping away at local control?
I think that was done a long time ago. I don't think there's a lot of local control left. But I would say that there would be a sigh of relief from school board members if you put this provision into place. They could focus on some of those other issues like curriculum. Whether we had add another second grade teacher, whether we talk about health care, whether we talk about drug abuse, what are we trying to do with our kids to protect the kids instead of negotiating most of their time on health care benefits? So I'm a pragmatic Republican. I'm trying to find areas of savings. I believe that my charge as governor is to govern the state and find areas of opportunity, take advantage advantage of them and provide as much relief and incentive to grow the economy as possible. I believe that this would help in all those regards.
Let's talk to Rob, who's calling from Waterbury. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob. Hello, Governor.
Hi.
My wife is also a dedicated teacher that works 70 hours a week. I mean, I get to see her half a day on the weekend because how committed she is to her students, and I'm in awe about that. But I take a different perspective than the other Rob from Central Vermont, who also is a spouse of an educator. You know, with our student counts down so much, something's got to happen on the costs that go up. You know, we've never voted against the school budget, have always voted in favor. But, you know, the burden on some people is becoming, I think, just so great that we need some solution. And I would just ask, hope that the legislature can compromise and follow the governor's lead here. I think this is the least onerous suggestion that I've heard. I mean, it's certainly preferable to layoff. So, Governor, I just want to thank you for your efforts in this regard.
Well, thank you very much, Rob. And again, I do believe this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I have a great deal of respect for teachers. And again, many of them inspired me throughout my life. So I just think that this is, as you stated, we have a declining student population. I've mentioned this, the 631, the six fewer workers in our workforce every single day, three less students in our K-12 education system every single day, less than we had yesterday, and one baby born to an addictive mom every day. So those are our challenges, but our opportunities as well. So if we can seize an opportunity like this, this is a gift. This is something that's laid in our laps. And if we don't take advantage of this situation now, then we've got some real serious problems ahead of us.
Let's talk to Jordan, who's calling from Winooski. Hey, Jordan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call. We haven't reached this point in the program, but my question's in regard to the marijuana legalization bill. Governor Scott just said that we should pass the teachers' union bill in order to just to see how that would affect the teachers in the next bargaining year. Why can't we just sign the same bill with Vermont marijuana, where they have a built-in program that will study how to implement dispensaries in the state, where other states around the country have implemented legalization of marijuana and have seen huge state revenue increases?
Okay, Jordan, let's just review the bill that passed both the House and the Senate. It has the House plan of personal possession, so a person could possess up to an ounce of marijuana and you could grow a couple of plants. I think it's two mature plants or four immature plants. It also includes a commission to look at this state regulatory approach that might be retail stores and the taxation of marijuana. A lot of people want to know what you're going to do with this bill. You can sign it, you could veto it, or you could let it become law without your signature. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, let's first of all, I just want to go through the process standpoint. It did pass the House and the Senate. The House passed their version. It was, I think, 74-71, very close vote. The Senate was overwhelming, I would say, maybe like 21-9 or something to that effect. So for their version, and then they combined the two was passed by both bodies. Now, from a process standpoint, just so that people understand, with every single bill, and I know you understand this, Bob, every single bill that gets passed has to go back to legislative council. And they read through the whole bill, make sure that it does everything that it was supposed to do. And then they send it to the House or Senate secretary for them to review. And then we get it back. And then we have my general counsel will take a look as well. We have 5 days at that point to either sign it or let it go or veto it, one of the three. So I just wanted – this could take a bit of time. We don't physically have the bill at mm-hmm. this point. It's going to be probably a week or two before we do get it. I've said during the campaign – as you probably recall, I'm not philosophically opposed to legalization. But I do believe we've got to get this right. I'm incredibly concerned about highway safety, trying to determine a level of impairment. I'm also concerned about our kids and the edibles. I think we have an opportunity, as I've said many times, opportunity to really watch what's happened in Colorado and Washington and other states, Oregon, other states who have legalized by referendum. And learn from them. And I've actually reached out to the Northeast governors and provinces to try and determine a level of impairment, a way to measure impairment as well. And so I'm saying, regardless of what happens with this bill, I'm still going to continue down that path of trying to do what we can, because I can't put my head in the sand. It's going to happen at some point. Massachusetts and Maine have both determined that they're going to legalize. Canada is talking about this as well. So we're going to have to determine some of those issues before too long. But why can't we get this right? Is my question. Why don't we put some of that into the bill? Why don't we work on that before?
Well, isn't the commission part of that? I mean, the bill really has two parts. It says in July of 2018, a person can possess up to an ounce of marijuana and grow some plants. But the commission's charge is to look into public safety and public health concerns. You will get to appoint someone to be on that commission. Isn't the role of the commission to look into and make recommendations on all the issues you just mentioned?
Well, again, I haven't read the bill yet myself. It did come quite quickly. It was a bit of a surprise to me. I knew it passed the House, but I didn't, and the Senate had a different version. I didn't realize they were going to attach it to the fentanyl bill at the last minute during the week or two ago. And I'm not complaining about that, but I was surprised that they got that far and that we were dealing with it this year. But as I understand it, there is a mechanism to come up with legislation to impose this structure by October or November of this year. So it's clear that we're not just studying it; we're going to do it from their perspective. I just believe that there are other ways that we can do this. Again, I think it's a big deal. We've got to get this right. And we should take the time to do so. And I haven't decided what I'm going to do. I have this, as I said, I'm not philosophically opposed to it. I have this libertarian streak in me that says you should be able to do whatever you want in your own home, as long as it doesn't create any harm for others. Maybe it's Yankee independence. Maybe it's the libertarian streak. But I get that part. But when it comes to highway safety, that's a different animal, and we have an obligation. I have an obligation to make sure that we are as safe as possible, and create that opportunity for those who are out on our highways and for our children as well.
I mean, in terms of the process, the commission will make some sort of recommendations in its report that will come out in November. And in order for those to go into place, the legislature is going to have to pass another bill to set up a state regulatory structure. So, I mean, you could easily veto that bill as well if you didn't like it.
There are a number of other vehicles that this could go be attached to as well. I mean, there's still the bill that was passed by the Senate that's out there. There's still the bill that was passed by the House that's still out there. This is just another drug-related bill, the fentanyl bill that it was attached to or replaced with. So, there are other opportunities, this being one, multiple others. But I haven't decided what I'm going to do. I will review it. This conversation about the budget and VHI has taken all of our focus at this point in time.
A lot of action in Washington on health care. The U.S. House has passed legislation that could have a big impact on a lot of Vermonters. First, the bill rolls back the recent expansion of Medicaid, a program that's been very successful in some people's eyes in reducing the number of uninsured people, not only across the country, but certainly here in Vermont. What are your thoughts about what Republicans in Washington are doing on health care?
Well, I think saying that there's a lot of things going on in Washington at this point in time is probably an understatement. Every day there's something new coming out of there. And what we'd like to see is some consistency, I believe. I'm really concerned about this provision. I've been pretty clear on this. A number of different press conferences I've talked about this, about the proposed changes to the Affordable Care Act that was passed by the House. I believe that in its present form, this would be devastating for Vermont. This there would be tens of thousands of people that would be without insurance. It would be hundreds of millions of dollars of reduced funding for Vermont. We're unfortunately, I mean, it's a reality, but almost half of our budget relies on federal funding. One third of our budget is spent on Medicaid, and one third of our population is somehow enrolled in Medicaid in one form or another. So this is a big deal for us, and we're not alone. I mean, there are many other expansion states. We took advantage and expanded Medicaid and received more of the benefit, but many others are in the same situation that we find ourselves in. So we're going to continue to work with other states to oppose these changes in the Senate. We've got a strong delegation, obviously, with Senator Leahy and Senator Sanders and Congressman Welch. When we've been reaching out, speaking with them, I've been speaking with my counterparts as well, some of the more centrist Republican governors and some who are just from expansion states that share in our concerns. So we'll continue to push back. We'll continue to voice our concerns and work with the Senate to find some common sense solutions here.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Robert in Bethel. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Hello, Governor.
Hi there.
Hey, Governor, I just wanted to compliment you on holding your ground regarding the whole health care deal with the teachers. I think the whole state needs to wake up and understand the economies of scale when it comes to every department in the education system. But that's not the subject I wanted to call in about. The one thing that concerns me with what's going on at what I call the clubhouse, not the state house, I think you might understand why I'm saying that. We in the state of Vermont don't have a referendum. And, you know, when the Secretary of State Ides announced this inspection thing on cars, it really, really affected a lot of people's lives. And I said to him on the radio, I said, I think it's time the people should be voting on a lot of the issues that the clubhouse up there passes around and passes around. Marijuana is one of them. The people should be voting for these things. The state inspection, the people, the voice, the power of the people should be speaking to the state house or the clubhouse, not the mahogany chairs speaking to us people trying to afford to get an inspection done or afford to keep our cars in shape. Very, very terrible situation with a lot of people.
So the whole voter referendum idea, that would take a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, very difficult to change the Constitution, as it should be. This is a big decision to make, but I understand your concern. Obviously, we're supposed to be there to represent the people. That's what the House and Senate is made up, and myself, all the statewide offices, we're supposed to be representing the people. And it's unfortunate that even in our elections, we don't have a great amount of participation, not this past election, but the one before. I believe it was about a 43% turnout, which doesn't tell us a lot about the feelings of Vermont other than apathy. I'm not sure whether a statewide referendum would change that voter participation, so to speak, but maybe. It just would take a long time to change the Constitution. I would like to speak a little bit about the inspection process that was done in the last administration, and I share some concerns about that. I've asked the commissioner and secretary of transportation to do take a look at our inspection process. to look throughout holistically about what it is we're trying to accomplish. And I always try and look at what are the goals of our inspection. It's, I believe, safety. And so if we can take a look at that and then work backwards from there and do whatever we can to simplify this process. And if there are regulation and rules on the books, so to speak, and in the inspection process that are unneeded, unwarranted, and don't really have anything to do with the safety, well, then maybe we should remove those and do whatever we can to reduce the costs to Vermonters who are suffering the consequences. So I feel your pain. I'm probably the only governor in the United States that has their inspection license themselves. I have a mechanics license on registered with the Motor Vehicle Department, so I can inspect vehicles. So I get it. And I just think that we need to take a look at this and do whatever we can to simplify.
Let's talk to Kate, who's calling from Montpelier. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Governor. Thanks to you both for taking my question.
No problem.
In my judgment, and in the judgment of many Vermonters, the American democracy, on which the Vermont democracy necessarily depends, is under threat by a president that does not respect the rule of law. And I think that came to a head this week during the Comey firing incident. The House, the Senate, the Oval Office, and 35 of 50 governorships are controlled by Republicans. Your party, Mr. Governor. And we're not going to get justice unless and until Republicans stand up and demand an independent investigation of whether there was collusion between this administration and the Russians to take the White House. Mr. Governor, I'm calling to ask if you agree with me that an independent investigation ought to take place, and if you're willing to state so publicly.
Yeah, I'm very concerned. I may have spoken to you last night at the corporate cup. But I'm very concerned about what's happening. This is disturbing, bizarre, and I think it undermines our trust in government. And I think that that's something we're lacking. We can disagree here on things such as vehicle inspections and this healthcare initiative and even pot and so forth. But we can do so in a manner that's transparent, and we can debate the issues. But what's happening right now, I think there's a real lack of respectfulness of the process. We're undermining our democracy. There's a lack of dignity, and I'm just very concerned. As far as an independent investigation, I would be in favor of that. Anything we can do to restore the faith and trust in our political process should happen. And I think that, to be honest, I think Senator Graham, Senator McCain, have advocated for that as well, and they're moving forward. The Senate has a bipartisan commission that is taking a look at the election as we speak, and I think it'll lead to other things as well.
You know, supporters of the president would say, you know, he talked about doing a lot of this stuff during the campaign, so it shouldn't come as a great surprise to people. Now, I know you didn't support him during the campaign, but should people be surprised by his actions?
Well, I think take the firing of the FBI director, who is in charge of looking investigating some of the issues involving the president. To fire that person right now, I would say that is concerning. If he had done it 2 or 3 months ago, when he was first elected, I think everyone would have understood. But this is just the timing of this really does, I think, again, undermines our trust in government. And I think that it's essential that we restore that in some way. And the only way we can do that is to adhere to a level of decency, I think, treat others the way we expect to be treated, be transparent, and act appropriately in our own backyard. And I think we all have an obligation to do that, and I'm trying to do that, and I know that my friends in the legislature are trying to do that as well. And we can be an example for others if we can adhere to those principles.
We'll be certainly following many of the issues that we discussed today. Governor Phil Scott, many thanks for being on the program.
Thanks very much for having me on.